Good morning. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I am fresh back from Israel and Jordan and glad to be with my buddies today. Dan McKay on the right.
Good morning, Natalie.
And Jim DeBacchus on the left.
We missed you, Natalie, although we had very ample coverage.
I heard Morgan Lancotti does a great job.
Yeah, so Morgan does a good job.
That's good.
My wife thinks she sounds a little young.
Okay, well, that's...
Which is something totally new, right?
Yeah, that's great.
And then we got into a really inane debate about whether or not there was a hyphen in her name last week that Emily gave me a hard time about. So sorry, everyone, had to listen to our hyphen conversation.
You know the term debacle, like something's been a debacle?
I notice sometimes people
call Jim DeBacchus.
Yeah.
And I think it's people who think that DeBacchus is a debacle.
Jim DeBacle. I can live with that.
Hey, I want to just start out by talking about what I think is huge news in our country, and it's what could be the unraveling of the Trump presidency and the news that's breaking about his former campaign managers, Paul Manafort, pleading not guilty to charges, including these terms, Dan, conspiracy against the United States and money laundering. Mm. Those are serious, serious things. You also have a campaign advisor who has pled guilty to lying to the FBI about connections with Russia.
Yeah.
What are you guys seeing? I mean, is this just interesting fanfare for people that don't like the Trump administration, or we got a serious public issue?
Yeah, I was going to say, this is like issue number 1,974, I think, of things that were going to take down the Trump presidency and the Trump legacy. So, I'm interested to see what, number 95 mm-hmm. will be. As you look through the charges and what was in this, I just looked at it from an attorney's eye. As I looked at the charges that were proffered, none of the facts that were alleged in the indictments have anything to do with Trump.
Mm-hmm.
The press is trying to draw, and this is, I think Trump is right on a regular basis about the press is regularly against him, and they're trying to draw a straight line between Manafort and Trump and
haven't
Russia.
Found it yet.
And they, because they haven't found it, all they can do is keep alleging, right? And so this whole process is just, and this is the sad part about it. The press does not understand, and they still have not learned the lessons of 2016. Nobody's looking to them and saying, oh, they're totally unbiased, and they're reporting only what they see. Because it is obvious that they have an agenda that they are running at the Trump administration. And as a result, I don't think this will land anywhere near mm-hmm. the detrimental
so
effect.
So you think this is going to get plenty of play, lots of news, but it won't amount to anything, and we'll have a Trump running for re-election and maybe 8 years of this guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
I looked at recent economic reports, and Natalie, you can appreciate this as much as anybody else. But with a 3% GDP
mm-hmm.
and the economy plodding along as strong as it is, Trump is going to win supporters so that in 2.5 years, when we're solidly looking at a presidential campaign, he won't have a solid Republican challenger. And two, he'll be in a position at that point to win re-election pretty easily because it's the economy, stupid, is what everyone always tells
interesting.
Me.
Jim, we need to give you time on this. I know that you'll have a lot to say.
So the Manafort thing, he was doing creepy things in the Ukraine. I mean, I was in the Ukraine at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
He took that $18 million from one of the sleaziest dictators imaginable, Putin's best buddy, and he was taking campaign strategy or giving campaign strategy to keep this guy and Putin in power. All right. Well, and he didn't pay taxes on it. It just is terribly sleazy. But let's talk about where the real issue is. It's not about Manafort. It's about the Greek guy. Because if you believe the FBI...
Papadopoulos or something like that?
Yeah.
If you believe the FBI, he sat down in Britain with known Russian agents, and he negotiated for the release of Hillary's emails. If that's true... And there it is. Mm-hmm. It's in an FBI. The guy pled guilty. If that's true, we're not talking about some little thing here. We're talking about the campaign for a man for president of the United States that sat down with foreign agents of an enemy
mm-hmm.
and took information from them. How high up did that go?
Yeah.
Because that's treasonous.
Yeah. So on the one hand, you know, Dan's saying this is a media that's against Trump. And then you've got Jim saying this is treason. And in the political middle, I think that there's some, you know, there's some fire here. Where there's smoke, I think there's some fire. And I think there'll be a lot more to come, Dan. But we'll be here to see.
Oh, yeah. We'll be at item number 3,754.
Touche.
In year eight of his presidency. What? Yeah, year nine. That freaked Emily out a little bit. She almost lost it.
You know, we also had President Trump calling Senator Hatch and basically saying, I'm going to shrink bear's ears. I think the quote is, I'm approving the bear's ears recommendation for you, Orrin. That's showing some strong political pull coming from our senior senator to get a previous president's national monument changed.
Yeah. You know, that's why this argument, Warren has to stay because he has power. Well, we don't want you staying if you use your power for evil. 27%, only 27% of the people of this state, according to a Tribune poll,
oh, yeah. The Tribune's doing great polls these days.
And it was also the Hinckley Institute. Only 27% want Grand Escalante shrunk. And yet every single member of the Utah legislature that's a Republican voted on a recommendation, a demand to the president that he do it. That's why we have all of these things on the ballot. The legislature is totally, completely, and absolutely out of touch with the people of the state of Utah.
Dan, it strikes me, though, as we have a mess going on here. And it reminds me of Obamacare, right? Where the White House and the House and Senate just passed it without a single Republican crossover, and we have this mess. Yeah. Bear's ears feels similarly because you have a president that just by fiat did this thing and created this large, large monument, and now it's being unraveled. And I just think it's not a good sign of leadership in our country.
You could argue, though, that President Trump leaving Bear's Ears Monument in place was counter to what was requested by the Utah legislature and everybody else, right? Mm-hmm. Remember the upset and tirade that went on as a result of that announcement, one. Mm-hmm. And then Grand Staircase, same issue, right? And so you look down those lists and they're overwhelming displeasure. So you can look at that reaction, the visceral reaction there, and you look at the Democratic presidents who foisted it upon Utah. And then you have Trump coming in and saying, the Trump presidency saying, well, we're not going to get rid of the entire monument. There are things here to protect, and we're going to take a little more surgical process and make it smaller. Couldn't you argue, though, Natalie, that Trump is actually moderating?
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say, in a weird way, he's my guy because I want these, special lands protected, but it was too large. I don't like the way it's done. I like it to be a public process.
1.3 million down to 100,000 is not moderation. It is a complete vivisection. It's not like that's a reasonable thing. How long can the Utah legislature be so completely out of touch, gerrymandering included, with the people of the state? We'll see.
Yeah. Hey, guys, just as we go into the second part of our show, I just want to hear your quick comments about former House Speaker John Boehner and what he said about Jason Chaffetz. I thought this was unfortunate. I guess he called Chaffetz a total phony.
Yeah, so
said he's all about Chaffetz. He's focused on self-promotion. I just didn't think that was very statesmanlike from the former speaker.
I think he used harsher words than that.
Yeah, I think anytime a politician calls another politician self-serving and too self-aggrandizing, I always laugh because usually they're highlighting their own favorite qualities.
Yeah.
This guy's the former Speaker of the House. And he was known for breaking kneecaps to get votes. So the idea that, Chaffetz is any more or any less of the western part of an east-facing donkey, that idea to me is just foolish. I'll just be short.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner in the studio with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. In our next segment, we'll talk about some local issues. Stay tuned.
Dan McKay on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. We had a sobering, very tragic event happen this week. Thought we'd just talk about it for a moment. The shooting death at the University of Utah, an international student, Chinese. He had some connections with the Eccles School. I work at the University of Utah, and I just have to throw compliments to the university for the way they've handled this. During the event, we were all notified through the instant messaging system for university community. I had an email in my box from the president of the university early in the morning, you know, explaining the circumstances. They actually canceled school, I think everyone knows, just in part as a safety issue, but mostly to, you know, to honor this student. Got email from my dean in the morning as well. This has really affected the university community. We lost one of our own.
Yeah, and that's
in a tragic way.
I don't know if this is the case at the U, but I remember when I was at Utah State, business classes and those kinds of things, and we'd have Chinese students or students from internationally, and they added an interesting flavor to the conversation generally. And I remembered that. In those classes, you know, you would collaborate, you'd work together, but there was always like this weird kind of, not weird, but just like this cultural separation, really. Mm-hmm. And the international students would kind of go off and kind of study together, and it would, you know, the weird, separation.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit excited because what I've seen come out of this kind of this tragedy thus far is a lot of people kind of looking up and saying, hey, we have these great international students that are part of our university campus, and it's kind of a rallying around. And I honestly hope that helps bring them more in, because my biggest fear is that people, you know, from foreign countries just decide to stop sending their talented students here.
Jim, on that point, I mean, one of the things I hate about this is the optics of a Chinese family sending their son to an American university and he gets killed by a shooting death. A random, you know, I'm taking your car, random shooting death.
So wrong on so many levels. And imagine the tragedy when you think your child is safe. You probably maybe didn't send him to New York or Chicago for safety reasons, and this happens.
So. Yeah, a real tough one. Hey, well, some other news to talk about. Let's talk about what's happening in the Salt Lake City Council buying the old motel on North Temple for $4 million. Then they're going to, you know, resell it to the highest bidder, all to try and create some affordable housing. This has created some controversy once again between the mayor and the council. Are you guys tracking that at all?
Look, I mean... I'm a little bit
this
pragmatic.
Is the guy that could have been mayor.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I wanted to see what where Jim was.
I think the solution that the city is not bearing down on hard enough is we ought to have the easiest rules in the history of the world for construction companies. It ought to take minutes and hours, not weeks. We ought to have approvals. We ought to have a 24-hour window if people want to pay late. The key to this thing really is taking care of the people with serious mental health issues, absolutely, Medicaid expansion. And then the other thing is just build, 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 build.
Dan?
Let developers go crazy.
I am loving
and
this.
And let's, because ultimately, even if they're doing the market ones, it trickles down. There becomes a surplus. So we build in a way that is good to the ecology. We build high rises, and we just keep building and building and building until developers go out of business because they've overbuilt. That's what the real solution is, not buying old hotels and building 12 units.
There was a lot of ways to comment on that, but Dan, I was struck by how the guy on the left was arguing for these burdens, to getting rid of these burdensome regulations for builders, and hallelujah, Jim.
But he wants to do it until they go out of business.
Then he took it too far.
Because that's what happens.
You have this problem where you have so little available land supply now in Salt Lake County. All of the cheap land is gone. And you need affordable housing. And the market's not going to provide it. And so it requires government to step in. There's some sort of market failure going on here. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult for government to know how to do it right.
Which I think is interesting, because it's kind of an interesting, you know, we've talked about this, Natalie, where we have a density problem on the Wasatch Front, where nobody wants density and they want density somewhere else, just not in their backyard, so to speak. But everybody recognizes the affordable housing problem is an issue. And so it's interesting to see Salt Lake City's way of trying to handle that, instead of, you know, zoning a property so that it appropriately you know, can handle the density and then, you know, take redevelopment of those kinds of things, the city's stepping in as the buyer and undoubtedly will take a loss on the property. Because once government is involved, it's out of the hands of a private owner or private, you know, private party, government can now take a loss. And, you know, some would say, well, great, that's wonderful. We want the government to be taken. That doesn't make any sense. For the government to be a market interrupter on this standpoint, it doesn't make any sense. So I understand all of the critics of this deal, but yet here we are.
Here we are. Hey, another topic. We got news this week that Governor Herbert has made his selection for the Christine Durham vacancy on the Utah Supreme Court. He picked another woman, Paige Peterson. This is not someone I know. But congratulations, Governor Herbert, for putting another presumably outstanding woman on the Utah Supreme Court. Jim, you get to now approve this, confirm this.
So one of my favorite jobs as a senator is I take every single judicial nominee from the most humble juvenile judge to Supreme Court nominees, and I force them for an hour to sit at the cafe on First Avenue and sit down and answer all of my questions, and I try to make it as awkward and uncomfortable as I can and probe around and not let things go. And it has turned out to be one of the best experiences. I mean, I'm terrifically impressed with the people we have on the judiciary, and I look forward to meeting with Judge Peterson. I think I recall meeting with her and
in an earlier appointment.
I see. She was just appointed in 2015. Right. So she was just put on the appeals
judge.
Yeah,
so this is a rapid rise.
Yeah.
But I think it's wonderful to have another woman on the Supreme Court, and I'm certain that she's qualified. Governor Herbert's done his due diligence here, so we'll see where this goes.
You know, for all of my issues with the governor, and they come up occasionally, I think we have pretty good judges, but I'll say for my gripe, the problem with, no, I won't say for the gripe because I got another gripe. I'll just say we still rank 50th in diversity of our judges. And they say, we can't find them. Well, Wyoming and Idaho and Mississippi find them. We're not looking hard enough. So with that caveat, I'll look forward to meeting.
That may be the case. And I applaud Governor Herbert for finding a what seems like a very qualified replacement. I don't, you know, not necessarily familiar with Judge Peterson, haven't worked with her. But I will say we do need more women in the practice of law, because I can go to a continuing legal education seminar and the men outnumber the women easily 15, maybe 20 to 1 in these seminars. So to Jim's point, I think it is difficult, candidly, trying to keep a balance when the practice of law is so off-centered in the state of Utah.
Yeah,
it's getting better, and I think it always will be getting better. So,
but hey, guys, I just returned from Jordan and Israel on a state-sponsored, governor-led trade mission. I wondered if you guys had any questions about how that shaped out, both as elected officials.
Tell our listeners what a trip like this entails. I mean, I don't think people really know.
You know, Governor Herbert invites people who have a business connection with these countries to accompany him. They take about 40 or so in the delegation. It is an official delegation of the state. Three legislators went. But interesting, Governor Herbert met with King Abdullah in Jordan. So that's the guy that was after King Hussein.
Yeah.
He met with Benjamin Netanyahu in Tel Aviv, and he met with the mayor of Jerusalem. So that's some pretty heavy hitting. I mean, our governor was meeting with heads of state.
In the hotel when the governor's off meeting
Netanyahu? I was just there on assignment for the Deseret News, and I didn't have a high-profile position. But I was able to see the incredible economic connections for our state. Had a business leader who bought a Utah company say to us in a setting, he said, the best Italian restaurant in the United States is in Salt Lake City.
You know? Olive Garden?
What, Dan?
I'm kidding.
There we go.
So,
what restaurant
was he talking about?
Valters. It'd be Valters. I think it would surprise people how relevant Utah was internationally. I mean, Trump's ambassador to Israel, a guy named David Friedman, had the whole delegation over for dinner at the ambassador's residence. So, you know, Utah was doing well.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
You've always sold me on the idea of Utah being proactive and going out and chasing this international presence.
Got to engage.
And you know, I think this is, it's been
valuable. When that type caliber of world leader will meet with your governor, it tells you something.
Yeah.
It tells you you're meeting the relevance, you know, Mark.
Or that nobody else is in town. Sorry. Okay, I didn't mean to say that.
Okay. Hey, another issue.
I'm in trouble with Natalie.
We had news about $70 entrance fees to our national parks. Who proposed this, Jim?
This came from the Trump Interior Department.
Okay.
You know, they're trying to follow the Utah model, which is should be very scary for every Utahn. We have,
Everybody's following the Utah model.
Where the fees support the services they're charged
Unlike
for.
Every other state, really, this is our absolute state policy. And it makes me throw up a little in my mouth during every single one of these hearings. Because these guys from the department come and say, we make a profit. We are there. We've gone from $12.5 million in general funds to $4.5 million. And the way we've done that is we've sold this, and we've got concessions, and we're bringing more people, and we are raising fees. So they've doubled, tripled the number of people, and yet they've taken less state money, and they're so proud of the fact that they're doing this by pouring more people in the land. You know, some things are not about making a profit. And I believe that that $10 million that we're losing is at a huge price to that most sacred 42 spots in our 46 spots in our land. We're abusing it by having this crazy philosophy that it's got to pay for itself, and we're making a lot of creepy deals. And we're losing a lot of that land. It's a bad system. And now the feds are going with that. This is step one.
There's always this tension between user fees and, you know, general purpose taxes to pay for things.
Yeah.
But I think we've, you know, my opinion from the middle, Jim, is that we've gotten too far into the user fee. Into the general fund revenues to pay for these things.
Yeah.
And users, they benefit. They should pay. And
not in the state.
Especially when they're crowded.
Yep.
There's a little thing in economics we call the price elasticity of demand. They got to check that a little bit.
But do we need to make
it for you, Jim?
Do we need to make
you.
Parks not available for moderate income Utahns? Do we need to exclude them?
Yeah.
Is this where we ought to go? Yeah, let's make it the Huntsmans and the Romneys can go and they can pay $10,000 a car and have the parks by themselves.
That's price elasticity for you, Jim. Just 10
some things ought to be above the elasticity.
Hey, let's also talk about Senator Hatch again. We're going to keep talking about Senator Hatch and then we got to go to gripes. But latest news, what? He's telling his friends he plans to retire at the end of this term.
Yeah, but then he goes.
Some
then he
articles
goes on,
are
what does
nationally.
He say on ABC? Just yesterday, actually, he says, "No, I'm planning on running."
Yeah,
because you know he's, you know, he is running until he's not running, and he's just waiting for. But I have heard through back channels that Mitt is in, like not like a little bit, but like he's in, and so it will be interesting to see where that goes. But.
Very interesting.
By all intents and purposes, the back channels are all saying Mitt's in and Orrin is fundraising for a library.
I like the sound of a Senator Romney from the political middle.
Yeah.
Hey, we got to go to gripes. Unless, Jim, you want to say anything about the Hatch race?
I will be dying to find out which Mitt Romney shows up. Is it the liberal Massachusetts senator who loved Planned Parenthood and gay people? Is it the conservative guy who ran for president who hated all of those things? Or is it the guy who hated Trump or the one that was kissing up to him so he could be Secretary of State? If we could find a moral center of Mitt Romney, maybe there would be a great senator there.
Dan,
from someone who is okay. So my only thing about the Mitt Romney deal is, for all of us for everyone who has blood, sweat, and tears the last few years over making elections really competitive, we're already getting ready to crown a new forefather. We love dynasties, even though we pretend like we don't.
Yeah.
And here we are getting ready to crown another dynasty. And the irony of this from the middle. Is that the middle wants these competitive elections unless it's their guy, and then there's no reason to have competitiveness.
Dan, the microphone stays with you for a mini gripe. We got a mini gripe.
Well, today's show was brought to you by the letter V, because I use visceral, and Jim said vivisect, and then when he had a chance to use vomit, he said throw up. So my gripe is that Jim did not stick with our letter V, and there you go.
There you go. Very good.
Okay,
Jim,
very quickly, that $4.2 million I talked about for state parks, it includes a subsidy of $1,100,000 for state-run golf courses. It comes out of that natural, out of that incredible department that ought to be running our parks. We ought to privatize the state golf courses.
Jim has a big button on his chest that's the state park button. Push that button.
My favorite is he's arguing for development and privatization of his A. This is like, this is my favorite Jim DeBacchus. Can I bring Jim? See, he's DeBacchus, not DeBacchus with me. But I would like to see more of that.
Hey, my mini gripe is just cramped airline seats after that Tel Aviv to New York City flight.
Oh, long day.
Long day.
Hey, I've noticed that as I get bigger, the seats get smaller.
Okay. You've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. Natalie Gochner with Dan McKay and Jim DeBacchus. Our program is produced by Emily Means. Thank you for listening.